Welcome to the Motor City Sports Rundown. We have a massive slate to cover today, and frankly, the landscape of two of our biggest local franchises just shifted completely.
You are not kidding. The news out of Ann Arbor regarding the football program is staggering, and the situation unfolding down at Little Caesars Arena with the Red Wings is turning into a full-blown organizational crisis. We are going to break down the leaked documents detailing exactly how Kyle Whittingham ended up leaving Utah to take the head coaching job at Michigan. It was not the graceful retirement everyone expected. Not at all. And then we have to unpack the fallout from Steve Yzerman stepping down as general manager of the Red Wings, Dylan Larkin requesting a trade, and what all of that means for Alex DeBrincat as he enters a contract year.
We will also check in on a looming contract deadline for the Pistons and look at the latest Forbes valuation for the Lions. But let's start with the seismic shift in college football. For months, the assumption across college football was that Kyle Whittingham was simply going to ride off into the sunset. He spent 32 years total at the University of Utah, 21 of those as head coach. He compiled a 177-88 record and was scheduled to leave the program in December 2025.
Right. The narrative was a legendary coach executing a clean, long-planned succession strategy. But the leaked negotiation documents tell a completely different story. Whittingham was pushed out because Utah decided to fast-track their defensive coordinator, Morgan Scali.
The details of these negotiations are fascinating. Whittingham's agent, Bruce Tolner, went to the table requesting a new one-year contract. The financial ask was a $9 million salary plus a $2 million bump for the assistant coaching pool.
Which is steep, but you can argue a coach with nearly 180 wins has earned the right to ask for top-tier compensation. The real sticking point, though, was the infrastructure demand. Tolner asked for a guaranteed $20 million in NIL backing.
That number shows you exactly how Whittingham views the modern sport. You do not ask for a $20 million NIL war chest unless you are actively trying to construct a roster capable of winning a national championship. He wanted the resources to compete at the absolute highest level.
But Utah athletic director Mark Harlan balked. And his counteroffer is what ultimately blew up the relationship. Harlan offered an $8 million salary, so a million short of the ask, but he attached an incredibly aggressive condition.
He demanded that Whittingham cede full control of personnel, recruiting, and future staff decisions to Morgan Scali immediately. Scali was the designated coach in waiting, but Harlan wanted to hand him the keys while Whittingham was still in the building.
You are essentially telling a program icon to become a figurehead for his final season. You can wear the headset and run the practices, but your coordinator is going to dictate who gets recruited and who gets hired. It is humiliating.
Whittingham obviously rejected that proposal. Instead, he signed a $13.5 million separation agreement with Utah. They paid a big premium just to force him out the door and clear the runway for Scali.
And Utah's mess became Michigan's large gain. Whittingham took the high-profile vacancy in Ann Arbor, signing a five-year contract that averages $8.2 million annually.
Notice he took less base salary at Michigan than he originally asked for at Utah. He accepted $8.2 million a year because he gets to maintain total control of the program, and he steps into a blue-blood environment that already has the NIL infrastructure he was begging for in Salt Lake City.
It completely alters his legacy. He built his entire reputation in the Mountain West and the Pac-12. Now he is making a late-career move to the Big Ten to see if his physical, developmental style translates against Ohio State and Penn State.
I am genuinely curious if Utah mismanaged this. Ripping the Band-Aid off to secure your future coach is sometimes necessary, but alienating a guy who built your modern football identity is a huge risk for Mark Harlan. If Morgan Scali goes 7-5 next year while Whittingham is winning 10 games at Michigan, the noise in Salt Lake City is going to be deafening.
Let's shift gears to the ice, because the situation surrounding the Detroit Red Wings is deteriorating rapidly. They are already dealing with the weight of a 10-season playoff drought, and now the foundational pieces of the franchise are actively shifting.
Steve Yzerman stepping down as general manager to take an advisory role created a sizable vacuum in the front office, and the immediate fallout from that instability has been brutal. Team captain Dylan Larkin requested a trade earlier in the offseason. The face of your franchise wants out, and you compound that with veteran forward Patrick Kane departing in free agency to return to the Chicago Blackhawks. So against that chaotic backdrop, the NHL Player Media Tour happens this week. Every reporter in the building naturally flocked to Alex DeBrincat to figure out if he is looking for the nearest exit too.
DeBrincat handled it professionally. He stated publicly that his intention is to stay in Detroit and that his opinion on the city hasn't changed despite the organizational uncertainty. Which is exactly what you expect a player to say at a league-sponsored media event. But the reality of his contract situation makes this complicated. He is entering the final season of a 4-year, $31.5 million deal. That carries a $7.875 million average annual value. He is eligible for an extension right now, and based on his production, he has all the use. He led the Red Wings in goals with 41 and points with 85 last season. He has scored 107 goals over his 3 seasons in Detroit. He is the primary offensive weapon. But how do you negotiate a long-term extension when the team does not have a general manager in place?
You don't. The talks are entirely on hold, and that delay works against Detroit. The longer he goes without an extension, the closer he gets to the open market, where a 40-goal scorer is going to command an absolute fortune.
Plus, if the front office ultimately grants Larkin's trade request, does DeBrincat really want to commit the rest of his prime to a franchise entering a full-scale rebuild? He signed up to play with Larkin and compete for a playoff spot, not to babysit a roster of 19-year-olds.
The Red Wings are backed into a corner here. Whoever takes over as general manager has to resolve the Larkin situation immediately, and then somehow convince DeBrincat that the new vision for the franchise is worth buying into. I don't even know how you define Larkin's trade value right now without a GM to orchestrate a bidding war. The entire organization feels paralyzed.
We will obviously keep tracking the GM search in Detroit and any movement on the Larkin front. Let's hit a few more stories real quick before we get out of here.
Sounds good. We have a major contract deadline approaching on the hardwood and a financial check-in for the Lions.
Pistons center Jalen Duren has a hard deadline of October 1st to accept his 1-year qualifying offer worth $9.6 million. And right now, he and the team are locked in a big restricted free agency standoff.
Detroit is offering roughly $180 million to $190 million, but Duren wants a max deal pushing $40 million annually. The front office is hesitant because his production and efficiency dipped noticeably during their playoff run, despite that 60-win regular season. He needs to be careful here. Dennis Schroeder famously turned down a 4-year, $84 million extension from the Lakers in 2021 to chase more money in free agency, and ended up signing a 1-year deal for just over $6 million. It is a cautionary tale. Duren is risking generational wealth if he overestimates his use based purely on regular season stats.
Finally, Forbes released their annual NFL team valuations, and the Detroit Lions came in at number 30 out of 32 franchises, with a total team value of $5.4 billion.
Which feels low given their recent on-field success and how popular they are nationally right now. But these financial lists always lag behind the standings. Legacy media markets just have a lower financial ceiling compared to Dallas or New York. Brand equity takes time to catch up. Still, the William Clay Ford family purchased the franchise back in 1964 for $4.5 million. Turning $4.5 million into $5.4 billion is a pretty solid return on investment.
$4.5 million wouldn't even pay for a decent backup quarterback in today's league.
It barely covers the practice squad and the catering budget.
That is going to do it for this edition of the Motor City Sports Rundown. Keep an eye on that October 1st deadline for Jalen Duren.
We will be back on Wednesday with more updates. Enjoy the games, everyone.